AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. The next 2 days are going to be active days weather-wise in the middle of the country. We'll get a quick outlook of what to expect. We've talked a lot about inflation on AgriTalk. Today, let's spend some time talking about what it might mean for the ag industry. And biosecurity is back on the priority list with H5N1 making the jump from bird to bovine.
Live via Farm Journal broadcast on the day we give to Caesar what is Caesar's, this is AgriTalk. This morning we catch up with Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. Then we'll hear from Rob Fox, Director of the Knowledge Exchange Division at CoBank. And we'll chat with Dr. Megan Niederwerder, Executive Director at the Swine Health Information Center. Right after the news from Michelle Rook, we'll get a weather update from Brett Waltz of BAMWX. I'm producer Big Apple Joe Stackler, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Big Apple Joe, thank you so much. 63 degrees, beautiful sunshine, barely a wind blowing out there. Day two of gorgeous days in April are on us right now. We've got some weather coming in, no question about it. But, boy, is it gorgeous out there right now. Welcome. Welcome to AgriTalk. Glad that you are here. Davis is taking a couple of days off. That's why Big Apple Joe is here with the intros. And, of course, that is why Michelle Rook is here with the news. Michelle, it's good to talk with you. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great and enjoying the weather just like you.
Yeah, no kidding. Here we go. They getting much done up in South Dakota?
Not a lot yet. I think there was a lot of concerns about this little bit of a frost scare around the 20th. And so most of the guys I talked to anywhere in the Dakotas over into Minnesota and parts of Iowa said, hey, we're going to hold off until that. And we just got past the crop insurance start for a lot of guys. So right. I think we're going to get in the field here pretty quick, though.
Yeah. Yeah. There was quite a fair amount of seed went in the ground. I don't know if it was corn or soybeans, but a fair amount of seed went in the ground on Saturday. I did not see a lot of activity on Sunday in Northeast Iowa, but the few producers that I talked to over the weekend kind of decided, hey, we're going to wait until this storm system is out of the way.
Yeah.
No sense of putting seed in the ground and then getting pounded with 2 or 3 inches of rain to complicate things going forward. Okay, yeah. Boy, we've got a lot to get to today, Michelle. Let's go ahead and get to the news.
Yeah, well, over the weekend, Iran's barrage of missiles and drones targeting Israel amid heightened regional tensions fueled by the Gaza conflict has spurred deliberations within Israel's war cabinet regarding a response. Now, despite intercepting over 99% of the projectiles, Israel remains resolute in determining the timing and scale of its retaliation. In discussions with international counterparts, President Joe Biden's national security team emphasized Washington's stance against participating in offensive actions against Iran. Meanwhile, global leaders have reacted variably.
Yeah, the U.S. obviously took a very active role in defending against this barrage of drones and missiles. But boy, moving forward, Michelle, the commentary has been very much kind of guarded in the U.S. advice to Israel on how to react to this. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And I started off with it this morning because I felt like this really had a big role in the marketplace on Friday in terms of reaction. And so maybe we're seeing a little bit more, I guess, cooler heads prevail here today.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
Well, the other thing that's been stirring everything up in the markets has been inflation concerns. Mm-hmm. And this morning, retail sales in March were reported as jumping 0.7% compared to the previous month, surpassing expectations of a 0.3% increase. And this follows an upwardly revised gain of 0.9% in February, indicating continued strength in consumer spending, again, throwing more water on rate cuts coming here during 2024 by the Fed. The Michigan Department of Ag has announced the detection of H5N1 in dairy herds in three additional counties, now bringing the total number of affected counties to four. This is prompting concerns about its spread across state lines, and USDA has advised farmers to test their herds before moving them to prevent further transmission. The outbreak in Michigan adds to a total of 29 infected dairy herds in eight states. A hearing in the House and Senate on the Biden administration's trade policy and continued hearings on fiscal year 2025 budgets are the focus this week. First off, USTR Catherine Tai will appear Tuesday before the House Ways and Means Committee on the Biden administration's trade policy. On Wednesday, she'll address the Senate Finance Committee on the same topic. Farm state lawmakers and farm groups are disgruntled regarding what they believe to be a passive approach by the Biden administration regarding efforts to boost farm commodity exports in light of USDA's estimate of an ag trade deficit of $30.5 billion for this fiscal year. Meanwhile, USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack will appear Tuesday before the Senate Appropriations, Ag Appropriations Subcommittee with the usual round of topics likely to be addressed, including food stamps, farm income, and a new farm bill, ag trade, and animal diseases. Speaking of the Farm Bill, House Ag Committee Chairman G.T. Thompson said he's going to move the bipartisan Farm Bill out of his committee in May. That's a little later than we thought maybe last week. The committee's ranking member, David Scott, said the legislation will move on a joint timeline. And the FBI has opened a criminal investigation into the container ship that took down Baltimore's Francis Scott Key Bridge last month, looking to determine if the ship's crew left the port knowing the vessel was troubled.
Okay. All right, Michelle. Hey, thank you so much. Appreciate you. We'll talk to you this afternoon.
You bet. Thanks.
All right, Michelle Rook. Let's bring in Brett Waltz, BAMWX.com. Good morning, Brett.
Hey, good morning, Chip.
Hey, a couple of active days here in the middle of the country, huh?
Yeah, two or three days here of some severe weather chances kind of ramps up today across especially Kansas and Nebraska and maybe southern South Dakota. I'm definitely concerned about some pretty large hail in some of those storms. Not necessarily a widespread rainmaker, though, across Kansas. I know there are some concerns growing about dryness out there. This won't be a system that brings a lot of rain there. It'll be further off to the north and to the east across Nebraska, Iowa, and South Dakota. And then tomorrow, more severe weather. Iowa, Missouri, Illinois, then into the Ohio Valley on Wednesday.
Now, when you say severe weather, we're talking about the possibility not only for some hail, but tornadoes as well, correct?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think that both hail and tornadoes and even wind, all three on the table. I think tornadoes may be even a bigger threat tomorrow in Iowa. Certainly still a threat today, but I'm a little bit more concerned about a couple of strong tornadoes tomorrow across northern Missouri and southeast Iowa.
Okay, and then Wednesday into the Eastern Belt, do we need to keep watch?
I definitely do think we need to keep watch. Some of it will depend on how quickly the rain can get out Wednesday morning. But I think, again, kind of all modes, Eastern Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, those areas need to be on the lookout.
Gotcha. Okay. Any red flags that we need to be aware of for South America?
You know, I think that while there are some short-term rains out there in Brazil, we are concerned that the rain season could shut off a little bit earlier than normal in central Brazil. So I do think that it could end up drier quicker this year. And be pretty dry through the end of the season.
Okay. All right, boy, we need to keep an eye on things over the next couple, 3 days. Thank you, Brett. Appreciate you, man.
Yep, thank you. Stay safe.
All right, Brett Waltz, BAMWX.com. Coming up next, let's talk used machinery and some of the trends out there. Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Machine Repeat here, folks. This segment of AgriTalk brought to you by our friends at Dakota Ag Innovations, makers of Dakota Shine, the best way I've seen to fix faded paint. Go to dakotashine.com or call 888-996-7801. Life is a gamble, a game we all
play, but you need to save something. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Hey, Rock is chiming in on the planting progress out there. He's over in West Central Illinois. He says definitely waiting on corn with wet and cold temps next week. Turning the bean planter loose today on the sandier soils. So, it's off and running. There is definitely no question about that. But a bit of a cautious start for a lot of guys in a lot of areas with these storms that Brett was just talking about. And as Rock mentioned, we've got some cooler temps. Not, I wouldn't call them cold, but definitely cooler than optimum temps in the forecast going forward. All right, it's Monday. That means it's time for a conversation with Greg Peterson. Machinery Pete, how you doing, Greg?
Hey, I'm doing well, Chip. How are you doing this Monday?
Well, I'm doing okay.
Well, good.
But doggone it. I had to pry myself away from social media a little bit this weekend because I got into a rabbit hole talking about inventories at equipment dealers out there. And the doomsayers were running pretty wild with their ideas of what that might mean for the ag economy going forward, dude.
Yeah, there's definitely the highest level of chatter on the downside that we've seen. And I guess it's interesting, Chip. I started posting on social media. I've actually posted every day since the first week of August of 2009. So we've seen some ups and downs there. And I've heard the chatter. And obviously things are changing. Recalibrating is the word I throw to it. But
yep.
You know, when it comes to sentiment or what people think, it's certainly very interesting. I don't really deal in that, though. I deal in what it sold for today and how that compares to yesterday or 5-10 years ago. And really the buoy in the water is 10 years ago, 2014 into 2015, because in the 34 and a half years I've been doing this, that was the biggest year-over-year drop in used equipment values, particularly large late model used values. Back then, what we saw was it was basically 20 to 25% year-over-year hit. So you have whatever, two-year-old tractor, planter, combine, sprayer. I mean, that was bloody on the dealer side. And I think now it's super interesting because that chatter is real. And obviously farmers are under tremendous pressure, price of corn and beans, and dealers are under pressure, particularly the large ag areas here. If you don't have as much exposure to the livestock side, maybe on the dealer, as much diversification. So when you talk to those dealers, you can hear it. I mean, they're worried. But again, when we look at the auction price data, let's just talk combines here, for example.
Okay.
Now, I ran into that social media whirlwind you were talking about a couple of weeks ago. I posted a note on it was a John Deere X9-1100 combine with only 107 SEP hours on a 22 model sold on an online sale out of Kansas back like 3 weeks ago. And it brought $573,100, which... It all depends on how you come at that. Now, the gap between what that thing costs new and that hard cash 573 there's no way to say that. That's just a big old gap.
Yeah.
But for 25 years, I've been compiling the auction prices and then also comparing them to the current dealer ad price.
Yep.
And so I get this thing, I call it our MPR, machine repeat ratio. It's simple. You just take the average, excuse me, fighting a cold here, but average auction price divided by average dealer ad price. And historically, it's about 71 to 76% is where it comes out, which if you think about it, you know, an auction, if times are kind of normal, something at auction sells for about, you know, three quarters of what it sells for in a dealer lot, kind of makes sense.
Yep.
What I've noticed through the ups and downs is when things get hot, like they were the last 2-3 years, my machine repeat ratio, like last year, was about 85%.
Right.
So auction price was almost what a dealer would get new on a lot or used on a lot. Now, when conversely, 10 years ago, in 2014, my machine repeat ratio was like under 60%.
Right.
On planters, on sprayers, on combines. And what I'm seeing right now, we're not there yet.
Yeah.
I'm not saying we won't get there, but like on a John Deere X9-1100 right now, the machine repeat ratio is 68.9%. So average auction price is just over 500K.
Yeah.
But the average dealer ad price is like 740 bucks roughly.
Okay.
So it's a dance day by day. I would say some other examples here. Again, let's just stay with some common deer models. So like an S790 combine.
Okay.
Now, the last 15 months, the average auction price has dropped. It's dropped 16.3% down to $238,000. Back in 22, it was almost 277. So again, it's recalibrating, it's softening. Mm-hmm. But the difference here is that the price jump of new the last 2-3 years was unprecedentedly high. So now when that X9 sells for 500 and whatever, the ouch the dealer is feeling is like, ooh, it's real. It's a big gap.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is on the auction front, the pricing is actually performing, you know, maybe even better than I would have expected, given how where corn and beans are at.
Gotcha.
And while we're seeing this with the late model stuff, the super high price stuff, we're continuing to see the nicest stuff with some age on it.
Yep.
The pre-def stuff.
See.
There is no slowdown in that stuff. I sent you a note, you know, so my pick of the week this week.
Yeah.
Would have had to have been a 2004 John Deere 8220 that sold last Tuesday up in Ontario, Alvinston, Ontario, farm auction.
Okay.
Excuse me. Brought $141,713 US dollars. That's the second highest price ever. But what's interesting, Chip, again, these cold spring colds are tough.
Sorry, man.
Yeah. The highest price ever, the highest price, the buoy in the water, was December 5th of 22, farm auction, Hamlin, Iowa. Now, just think about that date. I think that when we look back on this period we just coming out of, this end of 22 might be that high water mark like we saw back in maybe, say, March of 13.
Okay.
Because we saw an 8220 that day on December 5th. We filmed it for our TV show, but it was a very nice one. It had 2,675 hours, brought 182,000. And that went 42K over the record that day. Now, again, last Tuesday, we saw one come in at 141,713. So same sale last Tuesday at a 13 model 8235R, went for 185,373 US, 10th highest ever.
Yeah.
At a 99 model John Deere 9510 combine, went for 63,751, second highest in 10 years. So it's a weird market now.
Yeah.
The nice older stuff is what everybody wants. That newer stuff is depreciating big, but it's still not dropping as much as it did 10 years ago. And again, maybe in 2-3 months, maybe our data will show that. But right now, we're not quite there.
Greg, we started this conversation, and in my mind, I was thinking that it was the value of the older equipment that is making this different than that 14-15 period. But that might be part of what makes it different, but the lack of that 15 to 20% pullback in the newer used equipment that's available on the on the auctions. That's just as important as the value yeah. of the older equipment.
Yeah, and if you really pull back here on the late model stuff, we started to see it last July. So I'm sure everyone noticed out at auction the huge jump in the number of combines that were hit the auction market. We talked about it every week.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, what's different than 10 years ago is there's way fewer dealers, and they're way, way, way bigger than they were 10 years ago.
Right.
Now, it's no less painful for those large dealers to lose $250K in a combine they sell at auction. It sucks if you're that dealer.
Right.
But, you know, there's – it's just a different animal right now, and we're wading into it. But so far, again, I would have expected auction prices, honestly, frankly, to be a little softer.
Yeah.
You know, and people say 573, that was a bloodbath. And it's like, well, yeah, but that's also the fourth highest auction price ever on a combine. So it's interesting day by day to track for sure.
Yes. Yes. Well, you know, when markets are recalibrating, you see some strange stuff. And
yeah, you do.
I think you've done a really nice job of tracking that and explaining it. So, all right, get well, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, sounds great, Chip. Have a good week.
You bet. Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. We've got Rob Fox from CoBank next.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady Beach. Here we come off a weekend. We've got some pressure on crude oil futures that needs to be factored into everything. How are the grains dealing with that?
Yeah, not real well, Chip. We had a good finish to Friday, but taking back much of what we gained on Friday and you know, just a general weak tone across the grain and soy markets here. Soybeans double-digit losses. Meal futures around $5 lower in most of those contracts, and so that's leading the way to the downside. But the wheat complex is under pressure, and corn is under pressure. Soy oil actually has performed the best. It's starting to weaken up here, but it had shown gains earlier on.
Yeah, well, meal is really an anchor in the soy complex, right?
Absolutely, and you know, just really taking it on the chin this morning in the meal market. Now we've seen some corrective gains here recently in that market, but boy, just reversing out of that here at mid morning.
Well, yeah, it had a heck of a week last week. It was up almost $8 a ton last week, so a little bit of a downside correction shouldn't be too surprising. Just like getting back Friday's losses in the cattle complex, I guess that shouldn't be surprising either.
No, so it's kind of the reverse of what we talked about in grains there, and so strong gains in the cattle markets, live cattle and feeder cattle here at mid-morning, and so just some you know, corrective buying. We'll have to see. We need to see some stabilization in the cash markets, and so, you know, both the cash market and the product market need to stabilize here, but we'll see. Off to a strong start at mid-morning, and then hogs are just a little bit weaker.
Gotcha. Thanks, Brian. Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. If the world is your oyster, we've got pearls of wisdom on AgriTalk.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you are with us on this Monday morning. Davis is taking a couple of days off. He'll be back with us middle of the week. As you know, we have spent a fair amount of time talking about interest rates and inflation and the ag economy and the general economy and what it means for the markets going forward. We are going to continue that conversation going forward and get a highlight of what I think is a really, really top-notch report coming out of CoBank from Rob Fox. Rob is the director of the Knowledge Exchange Division there at CoBank. He joins us right now. Rob, it's great to talk with you again. How are you?
I'm doing great, Chip. How are you?
Doing just fine, just fine. This report that you released last week, I mean, it fits so well with a topic that has come up time and time again in conversations on AgriTalk. Title of the report, Sticky Inflation Puts Federal Reserve on the Horns of a Dilemma. Let's break that title down just a little bit and start with sticky inflation. How is that defined in okay. this report, and what's the evidence that inflation is, in fact, sticky?
Well, the evidence, there's various ways you can look at inflation. You know, there's the CPI, various different CPI measures, and PPI, and core, and headline, and subtracting this and that and the other one. But the Fed looks at the personal consumption expenditures deflator. That's what it's called. So that strips away the fluctuations in energy and food costs, which you can argue with that. But I would say the Fed doesn't have much control over fuel and food costs. So that's what they do look at for good or for bad. So in 2021 and 22, you know, the PCE measure of inflation was running 7, 8, 9%, you know, and this is core. CPI was even higher, you know, and it's steadily come down since late last year, easing down, down to that, you know, 2.5 to 3% range. But the problem is over the past couple of months, we've seen individual metrics that go into this PCE rising, and we're expecting for the first quarter, you know, the PCE is going to jump up probably to about 3.5%, which we'll find that out here in a few weeks. But you know, that's way too high for what the Fed wants to do. But you know, the horns of the dilemma that I'm describing you know, our economy is doing okay. You know, it's doing better than what everybody or a lot of people thought. Most people, economists, at the end of the year last year figured, hey, we're probably going to have a recession. We've gone through the highest, fastest rate increase cycle in the past 40 years. It's almost impossible that we don't have a recession. You know, they're all kind of metrics. Inverted yield curve and this and that. Well, as it turns out, we've avoided a recession. We're doing much better than people thought.
Yep.
But in the grand scheme of things, you know, 1.5-2% growth, that's not great historically. And I know the Fed is looking at some metrics and it's saying we can do better, one, and two, we've got some metrics that are deteriorating over the past year. For example, if you look at the broader unemployment numbers and you include people who consider themselves to be underemployed, those numbers have been creeping up for the past year. Mm-hmm. Job openings have been declining for the past 18 months. Mm-hmm. Fewer people are quitting jobs because they know it's harder to find one. Mm-hmm. Real disposable income growth has been trending downward for the past 18 months. And ultimately, that's going to drive consumption, and that's the biggest part of the economy. So I'll give you one more point. Atlanta Fed, they do a weekly GDP forecast that's widely followed in economic circles. It's called GDP Now. beginning of February, they predicted the Q1 GDP for the U.S. would be 4%. Mm-hmm. Today, they're saying 2.4%. Okay. So not bad, but a definite deceleration happening right now.
Yeah.
And the Fed is looking at a lot of wild cards here in the deck. Oil prices are up at 90, and a lot of economists are calling they'll probably hit 100 by mid to late summer. That would be a big damper on the economy.
Yes.
The federal debt, as you know, is out of control. And what that's doing is that's driving up borrowing costs for everybody already. That's driving up market interest rates.
Yep.
Without the Fed having to do anything, right? So yep. Federal spending is taking care of those rate hikes for them. You know, the stock market, I don't know if you play the stock market, but to me, I lived through the dot-com crash.
And
this looks a lot. I don't know. I'm not calling one way or the other, but it's certainly a risk, you know?
Yep.
That bubble burst thing back in the day was one of the main contributors to a recession the following year. So kind of all these things point to me that the Fed stated in December, we're going to have three rate cuts in 2024. Then just this couple of weeks ago with their last meeting, Chairman Powell said explicitly, there's no significant diversion from our earlier policy statements, right? So that means Powell, 2 weeks ago, he still thinks three cuts are on the board.
For 2024?
Yes.
Yeah, it doesn't seem likely to me at all.
Okay, so I got a question for you. So if you look at what's driving the higher inflation here over the past couple of months and you drill deep into it, it's being driven by a few things. Housing costs. Primarily, and then also insurance costs.
Insurance
for vehicles and insurance for houses.
Yep.
So if you take those three measures out, we're at our 2% Fed target today.
Right.
So my question then is, how is the Fed keeping interest rates high going to help with housing costs and insurance costs? And I don't have an answer for that.
I don't have an answer for that either, Rob.
Yes. So that's why I'm sticking with believing what the Fed said, three rate cuts in 2024.
Okay.
Probably starting in July, right? And ending in December.
Okay.
But I wouldn't put my mortgage on that. You know, we've seen a lot of crazy geopolitical things going on, and you never know. The Fed rarely changes its stated policy, but it does on occasion if certain extenuating circumstances arise, and they take a lot of heat when they do that. So they hate to do that.
Okay. I'll admit, Rob, I'll admit, I didn't think there was anything that you were going to say today that would get me rethinking the idea of the Fed not changing interest rates through the end of the year, but you got me rethinking it.
Good. I gotta admit, I'm an outlier in the world of economists here, but I'm sticking with this position.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting. And it also makes me wonder, you know, with the stated goal out there of an inflation rate of 2%, could we get inflation all the way down to a 2% annual rate without going to a recession, without forcing a recession with even higher interest rates, you know, leading into it or something like that? I wonder if they could accomplish what the ultimate goal is without avoiding that recession. I'm not too sure that they could have.
Well, you know, I think the Fed and they're optimists. They want to achieve great things. They want that on their resume. We want our government policymakers to have confidence in America, the American economy, and think that we can be good or great, right? So I believe their bias is to is to try and drive this economy from here forward in a expansionary phase. Now, this problem is this thorny inflation numbers, which are not coming down as fast as they hoped. They admit it. They've said it as much. It's going to, inflation is going to be a little bit higher for longer. So my bias today, right now, is that they're hoping to push this economy stronger and crossing their fingers that within the next couple of months, this inflation at least doesn't get worse than it is.
Gotcha.
You know, it stays where it is.
Okay, there's only 30 seconds left here, Rob, but I got to ask this question. The elections in November, does that get in the way of the Fed's plans or do they ignore it?
In my mind, they completely ignore it because, as we know, these cuts, they take some time to take effect, right? Mm-hmm. Even at the most optimistic, you know, scenario, if you cut rates today, we won't be until after the election till we really see the economic benefit of that. So
that's
I think they know that, and I don't think that the election has any concern to them.
Excellent. Excellent. It's a great report, Rob. Go to CoBank online to get a copy of it. It's really good. Rob, thank you so much. Appreciate you, man.
Okay, anytime, Chip. Bye.
You bet. Rob Fox, Director, Knowledge Exchange Division at CoBank.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
We don't make the news, we render it. AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you are with us on this Monday morning, getting things rolling. Davis has got a couple of days off. He'll be back with us at the middle of the week. Boy, I tell you, we've been finding ways and haven't had to work that hard at it to continue to address the issue of the H5N1 virus making the jump from birds to bovine and some of the other questions that it creates for all of livestock, for all the biosecurity measures that are out there, and stopping the virus from making the rounds through the livestock industry. So we're going to continue to talk about that. Right now we've got Dr. Megan Niederwerder. She is the executive director at the Swine Health Information Center. Dr. Niederwerder, thank you so much for making time for us this morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. Glad that you are here. Before we talk specifically about the webinar that's coming up at the end of the week, talk to me about the Swine Health Information Center. You know, what is it? Who is it? Where is it? What's the mission?
Yes, the Swine Health Information Center was founded in 2015 with pork checkoff dollars, looking at what's the risk of emerging swine diseases to the U.S. industry. It was really formed after the introduction of porcine epidemic diarrhea virus, so that swine producers really wanted to support an organization that could be on the lookout for what's the next emerging disease risk to the U.S. industry.
Yeah, and here we are talking about H5N1 that has made the move from birds to dairy cattle so far. We've been talking a lot about it. The best possible outcome of the spread of this disease is that it stops when the migratory birds go back north. Worst case is if the virus continues to spread in cattle and makes a jump to other mammals. This webinar is about keeping the virus out of hog houses, correct?
Correct. We really wanted to have this webinar to ask the question, has the risk changed to the swine industry now that there are these detections of high-path AI in dairy cattle and in goats? And so really one of the missions of the Swine Health Information Center is to respond to new and emerging diseases in the industry, even if that's impacting other livestock species, to understand has the risk to swine changed and what can we put in place proactively to reduce the risk to our hogs.
Right. Okay. So let's go over the details of the webinar so that we can get it in twice. I want to make sure that people understand this. It's the HPAI in Livestock and Risk to Swine webinar. It is taking place on Friday, April 19th, this Friday, from 11 a.m. to 12:30 Central Time. It's a Zoom webinar. Now, Megan, where can people go to register for this webinar?
Yes, the webinar registration is available through a link on our website, which is swinehealth.org. We have this webinar in collaboration with the American Association of Swine Veterinarians and with Iowa State University. And so with that registration link, you go to a website to sign in your information with regards to name and email address. Then you'll be registered for the webinar to watch that live and to ask questions on Friday. If anyone misses the live webinar, however, we will also have a recording available again on our website after Friday. So swinehealth.org is the best place to locate that.
Okay, who's this going to have? The information in this webinar is going to be geared to, is it producers? Is it veterinarians? What is it?
Yes, what we're trying to utilize with the webinar is an overall information resource on influenza A. So where is the virus globally as well as nationally? How has it changed over recent years? What's the update on research, including risk to swine? We're also looking at understanding what's the current situation within the dairy industry. And so learning from their outbreak, learning lessons that they have identified with regards to biosecurity for wild birds. And we're also trying to inform producers and veterinarians utilizing our outbreak investigation tool to identify biosecurity hazards today that they can close that gap with regards to risk for avian waterfowl access to our hogs. And so it's really a all-encompassing webinar trying to inform risks, biosecurity hazards, the dairy industry situation, as well as just an overall overview of influenza.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So has the risk around H5N1 changed for the hog industry? Do you think it has?
You know, anytime a virus changes the species that it is affecting or yeah. the geographic distribution, we have to be able to ask that question and say, how has the risk changed? I think certainly it is a impetus for pork producers and for the swine industry to consider how we best reduce the access of wild birds to our hogs or to any feed or water source that's going to have access to our hogs. So it's certainly an opportunity for us to learn early and to hopefully prevent any risk for introduction.
Okay. Yeah. Taking care of the animals that we've got responsibility for sometimes the goalposts move, and it feels like the goalposts are moving on this one right now. And the job has gotten a little bit tougher because of some of the things that are happening out there right now. So the Swine Health Information Center and the American Association of Swine Veterinarians are having a webinar this Friday, April 19th, 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Central Time. You can register for that webinar by going to www.swinehealth.org. Have I got all that right?
Yes, thank you so much.
You bet. All right, thank you very much. That is Dr. Megan Niederwerder. She is the Executive Director of the Swine Health Information Center, with some important information coming up in that webinar this Friday. Be sure to tune in for that. Thank you for listening this morning. Come back this afternoon. We've got Mark Rempe, Quad Commodities.